Welcome to the Sacred Body Podcast with Stacey Ramsauer. I am your host, Stacey, and I believe that the body is a space of reverence. Whether you were talking about your body of flesh and bones that house your soul, spirit, or the body of the earth, even your body of work, I believe the body is a space of sacred connection and reflection. Until we have the capacity, the tools, the language, to relate to our body and express ourselves with ease and authenticity, our relationships and our experience of belonging here to this earth and to each other will be fractured. On this podcast, we explore the dynamics of light and darkness, pleasure and pain, and even comfort living in our own skin. I hope you enjoy. Welcome everyone to the Sacred Body Podcast. I get to have one of my favorite people back on the podcast. I'm welcoming my teacher, Sunny Rose Healy. And I invited Sunny because she is one of my first lines of defense when it comes to all things women's health and Ayurveda, in particular postpartum health. And I'm investigating this question about postpartum rage. What is it? Why does it arise? How do we tend to it? And really challenging myself and the culture to get away from our tendency to pathologize behaviors that are uncomfortable. So to begin, Sunny, welcome. Welcome back. Thank you so much for agreeing to be here. And I just want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself a little if folks haven't listened to the first episode we did together. But who are you and what do you do in this crazy world?
I'm Sunny. And in this crazy world, I am many things, but I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner. I've been a student of Ayurveda for over 20 years. And I've been teaching Ayurveda and having a women's health practice that's Ayurveda centered for, maybe 15 years now, something like that. I'm a mother. I have two youngish children and I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I'm the co-founder of the Perinatal Wisdom School, which you know well, Stacey, is a school where we work to train people to support women and families during the entire childbearing year. I love that term, the childbearing.
I do too.
But through the whole childbearing year, which we call perinatal health, right? Perinatal health and perinatal wisdom. And I have an herbal company. And I could probably go on, but those are the main things that I do. And thank you for having me. It's always so fun to talk to you.
I think this conversation is really important. It's important, I think, to reinforce things. You know, I take for granted, my mind almost defaults at this point to Ayurveda and that framework, but it's pretty radical for most people. It's a very different way of seeing the world, seeing the body, seeing the human experience. And so let's start there with the framework of Ayurveda. And we can go specifically to the Ayurvedic view of, well, if you could give us a little background on like the Ayurvedic view of health, a little mini spot on that, but then moving right into postpartum.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah, I know. How to fill it down, right? So Ayurveda comes from the Vedas, which is an ancient Indian group of texts from a long, long time ago. And Ayurveda is one of the things that came to us through the Vedas. And it's a complete system of medicine. Many people are familiar with Chinese medicine, and Ayurveda also is a five element system of medicine. And through those five elements, we have everything in creation having those five elements, right? So the body, the mind, the consciousness, the trees, everything on the earth, everything in the universe actually has five elements. So when those elements coalesce, we get something that most of us are maybe familiar with or have at least heard of, which are the doshas, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. Vata being the more kind of airy, etheric one of the three, Pitta being the more fiery of the three, and Kapha being the more kind of earthy, grounded of the three. And all of us have all three making up our constitution. When we think about constitution kind of in the Western way, we tend to think of the body. But I think leading us into maybe a lot of what we want to talk about today is that in Ayurveda, the body, mind, and consciousness and spirit and all of those things are not separate. They're a trinity, right? Those are, that's a trinity of one being. And so anytime we have something going on with the body, the mind and emotions and the spirit are affected. And conversely, something's going on in the mind, the body takes that on and we feel it in the body and it manifests in the body. And I think also coming from Ayurveda, it's helpful to note that digestion is kind of everything. And so our health is formed by having healthy digestion. And when digestion isn't healthy, we can not only not digest food well, but also experience.
Mm.
So I think that's a really useful piece of Ayurveda. And is that enough of a mini background?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's so wonderful. And it just speaks to like how deeply embodied this wisdom is in you, because it's so clear. You know, of course, there's like so much we could say and so many rabbit holes, but that was so clear. And something that struck me while listening to you is, because I've been listening to like a lot of dude quality podcasts. Like I've been listening to the Huberman Lab, and he had this like 3-hour podcast on optimizing fertility, which is of course something that I learned through you and through Rebecca Rose and the Perinatal Wisdom School, ways to optimize fertility. And there was a lot of it that I found just like wonderful, fascinating. He goes into so much detail about cellular health and the biology of it. And then there's so much that's just like what I consider crap. And not crap, but just so antithetical to what I've learned about women's health, which and health, human health, but women's health, in the significance of our emotional state, our spiritual experience on our physical health. And what I love so much about Ayurveda is the honoring of the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in this miraculous experience of birth, like while it's this mega physical experience, so much of it is largely unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystery of it, and allow, you know, there is a system, a scientific system and approach that allows for the mystery.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, you know, when we're talking about the cell biology of a thing, it's important. And it's important to not forget all the other elements too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us to hold all those things. I mean, I noticed this with myself. It's hard to hold all of those things simultaneously. I find sometimes I have to kind of go here for a while and do what you're doing, like listen to all the dude podcasts. You know, and then it's like, wait a minute. I need to go over here for a little bit. And actually there's some dudes I've been listening to lately that are really bringing in the spirit and the unseen as well. So, we could talk about that, but let's talk about, you mentioned, wanting for me to kind of go into the postpartum side of Ayurveda a little bit. And so if we're talking about those three doshas that I mentioned, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha, when we give birth, Vata, I mean, certainly all of us is involved, but Vata is the one that tends to get moved and maybe even disturbed pretty easily by change, by dramatic change. So anytime we have big movement happening, so birth, babies coming out, we have the fact that the main seat of Vata lives in the pelvic area. Mm. And so we have that, you know, very important part of our body and spirit being involved in that process and a big change happening there. And then we have the fact that there's space that's created in the body as the baby and the placenta and the fluids all leave very quickly. And that space and the change involved causes Vata to go high, as we say, right? So Vata is now high. And Vata being high will give rise to us really experiencing the elements of Vata, which are mainly ether and air. So you can imagine, right, that even those of you that aren't familiar with Ayurveda, that when we have air and ether predominating, lots of subtle things are happening. And when they're high, they also can kind of extinguish to some degree that digestive fire that's so important. So that's one of the things we're doing in the postpartum time, right, is trying to reestablish the balance of that digestive fire, the fires in the body. And so this is not just in the belly, right, but everywhere in the body we have digestive fire. And also when Vata goes high, we tend to experience certain qualities of like dryness and feelings of separation. So we're experiencing these again on the physical level and on the mental emotional level. Mm-hmm. So physically, you know, dryness, space, discomforts, the nervous system is activated. And so we're kind of feeling all that, both joy and sometimes, you know, difficulty of the nervous system being activated. Sleep can be disturbed. And the emotions that come with Vata tend to be things like worry and anxiety and fear and sleeplessness, right? So all of those things can become activated in the postpartum time. And so the way that Ayurveda, as well as I would say pretty much all of the world systems that, you know, where the women are holding the knowledge and holding the intact knowledge of how to work with that time, we're bringing in things like warmth to counteract the cool quality of Vata and oil to counteract the dry quality, and things that help the digestion, like easy foods, easy to digest foods, and herbs that help that process. So that's not the only thing that can happen, right, in postpartum. I mean, Pitta can be high, Kapha can be high, but Vata is almost certainly going to be overly activated to some degree.
And because none of these elements exists on their own or separate from one another, there's a lot of interplay. Like a consequence of Vata being high is that it can, you know, other things can be exacerbated too. And as you're speaking, you know, as I mentioned, one of the dudes I've been listening to is Andrew Huberman, and a lot of his, he's really big on cold therapy and cold plunge, cold exposure. And the way he was speaking to this specifically in the Optimizing Fertility episode is, you know, for hormonal health, for example, it's not necessarily that cold is good for sperm production or the health of the egg, but cold reduces heat, and heat kills sperm, and heat, you know, excess heat can do damage to a reproductive tissues, any biological tissue. But I think it's interesting, you know, in that moment, I was like, that's Ayurveda.
Yes.
Opposites cure each other. Yeah. The medicine is largely intuitive, and I value so much and feel like maybe some responsibility to honor and anchor attention into this fact of, for millennia, humans have been discovering medicine through their own bodies, not through a microscope. Mm-hmm. And there's profound value in that. And I think more and more our medical system is like losing that or forgetting about the complexity of a human being and how we apply medicine and healing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the interesting things I think about when you say that too, is that Ayurveda is not just something that we discovered by trial and error. I mean, it is said that Ayurveda simply is and always was. It's the law of nature, basically, is what that means, right? So it's not something where we tried this and that didn't work, and we tried this and that didn't work, but it's actually simply the laws of nature. And so coming into alignment with the laws of nature and aligning ourselves to the laws of nature works.
Yeah.
Right? Because it is.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought?
Gosh. So would you speak to, like you mentioned, pretty typically Vata goes high in the postpartum time after a baby is born. And there's the physiological reasons for that. And then there's also just sort of like the chaos of having a newborn baby. Like, even if you wanted to sleep, sometimes you can't. And so that element of contributing to Vata going high, but the other doshas, Pitta, Kapha, how might they be impacted?
One of the things is something that you mentioned, which is there's the interplay of the elements. So Vata goes high because it's so mobile, it can push the other two, right? That's one of the things that could be happening. And when Pitta goes high, then we might actually feel hot and be sweating and oily and like even the look on my face. You can see the look on my face as I'm saying it. Then we start to get irritated and frustrated and angry, and all of those emotions can kind of come out of that too. So oily, hot, and then the emotions, frustrated, angry, you know,
critical,
all the other kind of manifestations that come out of those sort of core emotions.
All the other core emotions that Stacey experiences on a daily basis.
Yeah, those can come up. And so especially also if we're, you know, having a baby, I mean, that can happen to us in the winter, maybe Pitta was already high, but especially in the summer, we're giving birth, Vata's high, and we're all ready. You know, maybe we've educated ourselves and we're ready with all these things to support Vata, but actually we're hot and irritated and angry and like, get away from me, and you know, all of that business that can come up too. And so we need to, the same thing, find what's the opposite of some of those qualities and bring that in to help support what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're looking at the level of emotions, emotions belong to the mind, according to Ayurveda. So mind and emotions, manas. There's a system in Ayurveda called the Srotamsi, which is the channels, right? That everything, it's basically the functioning of the body functions through the channel system, but we have a channel for the mind. And the channel of the mind is rooted in the heart. So we can also look at that. We can look at the doshas first. Like that's the kind of the first thing that we need to do is bring down the doshas by bringing in opposite qualities. Like if there's too much heat, we need to bring in cool, for example, right? And also we want to look at like, what's the root of the emotions? It's the heart. And how do we support the heart? Right?
Just for the sake of asking, clarifying, when you say support the heart, you know, sort of intuitively, I just get what that is, but can you speak to the ways that we can support the subtle aspects of the heart by supporting the physical heart itself?
Yeah, I mean, we can support the physical heart. Well, this is an interesting whole other dialogue maybe, but the subtle aspects are kind of the things that I might go to. Like if we are working with the doshas and we're working with, let's, you know, we're in the postpartum time and we're supporting all the things that need to be supported and the emotions are strong, I probably would go right for the subtle aspects of the heart rather than like, you know, I'm going to use Arjuna as an earth towards the heart. You know what I mean?
Yes. Okay.
And so some subtler aspects, some other ways that we can support the heart would be maybe working with the marma points or working with herbs, because herbs kind of go to a subtler level, or actually breathing. Pranayama is one of the best ways to support the heart and the mind and the emotions and the body, right? We can do all of those things together. So food, herbs, what we call lifestyle practices. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that if you want. Mm-hmm. And then subtler therapies like breathing, pranayama, sitting with friends and expressing ourselves, putting rose on the hearts of our palms or our actual hearts. That's a really good medicine for calming the heart and soothing the heart.
You know, I just, almost like exposed myself there in the fixation that we often have with, what's going on that we can see, right? And none of us can see our own physical hearts. I mean, we can see our heartbeat, but like the sense that going to the gross level, I think is what I mean, and negating or forgetting the subtle, which, you know, we're operating there as fully as we're operating in any gross realm. We could move into, I don't want to move away from the Ayurveda quite yet, but just want to name so we can move there, these sort of basic needs of a new mother that include the presence of wise women, the presence of loving company, and how that impacts the entire system, but particularly, you know, heart, mind, sense of well-being. It's so beautiful. So just to sort of round out this conversation about the Ayurvedic view of postpartum, can you speak to the sacred window and what that is?
Yeah, the sacred window, as it's often referred to, is the 6 or so weeks after we give birth. And that's a time when, you know, kind of all the things that I've talked about, like vata maybe being high and the digestive fire being low and the need for rest being very, very great. Like that's when we're super malleable. And I don't want to use the word vulnerable. I think malleable might be a better word, but we are vulnerable in many ways, right? Mm-hmm. We're born too in so many ways, even though we've come into our power also in so many ways. But the great need for rest and healing and really outside support as much as possible is a really big deal. And those 6 weeks are, again, observed worldwide by most cultures. Mm-hmm. So we know, you know, if we weren't already convinced, maybe that will convince us of like, well, everybody else is doing this. It must be a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found a really cool study. I'm doing research for like very linear Western research on postpartum practices. And there's a really cool comprehensive study done about traditions, you know, global traditions that honor a month, you know, anywhere from 4 weeks to 6 weeks, and the overlapping practices. And every culture has some element of heat, of course, long extended rest, other people coming into your home to do all of the housework so that you can rest and be fed. And it was so interesting. The framing of the study was first acknowledging how much of a contrast that is to Western culture, but then recognizing that, you know, because of migration and immigration, let's say a Chinese immigrant in the United States might have trouble not only receiving that kind of care, but having a doctor be supportive of that kind of care. And so there was an investigation about, you know, the prevalence of these practices and something, it was like some question about whether or not they cause harm, like do more harm than good. And it was just sort of frustrating to me because it was like almost there. The study was almost there to just show like globally, worldwide, women have always known that there are certain elemental pieces of healing, and they could have gone into like, I don't know, measuring the benefit of each of these things. I suppose that'll have to be my job now, not that I'm moving into academia, but I just found it really beautiful to see how much overlap there is, very specific foods, you know, all soft, warm, easy to digest, and full of nutrient dense ingredients. Before I blabber on too much longer,
binding pass it back the belly, to you. The binding aspect is also there in so many places.
I felt like the most, I think where I'll center more of my research is the significance of like a flock of other women creating almost a protective circle. And of course, one of the things in the study was like the complexity of if it's your mother-in-law and you don't get along with her, and it's like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like also there's someone else cooking and cleaning.
Yeah.
And your responsibility, your role is rest, heal. And it's sort of, you know, that points in the direction for me of a lot of the emotional complexity and disturbance that most women, certainly in our culture, our shared culture of Western American culture, the difficulty most women have in resting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's this huge emphasis on the individual in Western culture, right? And we can see that in sort of the realm of the psychological space, the mental emotional space, and also the physical space of like the idea of the nuclear family, and everyone's got to do their own thing. And most of us have that sort of communal element in our lives. And so all the work, whether it's the seen work or the unseen work, I think in the Western view of things is done by the individual. And it's this super, super hyper individualization of everything that, you know, I don't know. I think it can be problematic in many ways.
What do you see? I mean, it could be one thing, could be several things, but what do you see as perhaps the most critical missing piece in our Western approach to postpartum care?
Oh gosh, to think of one.
You don't have to think of one, but we'll start with.
The thing that comes most immediately is that because it isn't being talked about that much, people don't even realize the importance of it in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's the first missing piece. I mean, I have women that come to me who are, you know, well-educated in terms of like holistic health and are taking care of their health in kind of a non-standard way already. And yet they're coming for pregnancy. And when I'm offering postpartum planning sessions, I'm hearing, oh, I think I got it. This is for a first baby. Because anyone coming for a second baby is like, you know what? I think I need help.
I need a redo.
A redo on that one. Unless they already kind of had it the first time. But yeah, people just aren't seeing it because it's not being talked about enough. And in the world that you and I live in, it might even look like it's being talked about a lot, but actually it's really not being talked about in the general discourse.
Well, and it's not what, I mean, I really resent that. This is not meant to be a call out, but like this huge, I think very important organization, Postpartum Support International, that just like reposting, oh, Kylie Jenner had a really hard time postpartum. Kylie Jenner said it was hard. She had depression. And I'm like, what the fuck does that tell anybody? Like,
it's okay.
How does that help? It's okay for you to be depressed and go see a doctor about it. Like, we're missing 90% of the equation here. And not to say that, I don't know. I also don't want to, it's not meant to disparage anybody or Kylie Jenner even, like, but probably there was zero preparation for, you know, this long extended rest with specific healing foods and loving touch and a specific kind of care that, yeah, that can hold the complexity that is birthing another human from your body, mind, spirit. I mean, I remember my doula before my son was born, she said, it's a shattering. And that is exactly how I experienced it. And so, you know, you said you didn't want to use the word vulnerable. I think I heard what you meant by that. And it's also like, there's this nascent power, but the structure around it has to be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Like it's a total rebuilding.
Yeah, it is. And there, so that's why we have maybe these sort of stories or myths, right, that come to us about going into the underworld and being, yeah, reversed, because that is, in so many ways, we can look at it as that's what's happening in that process.
Yeah, so that, you know, I mentioned at the top of this, I'm interested in this experience that I had, am having, and that, you know, as I reach out and I mention it to other women, they're like, oh yes, but I never hear anyone talk about postpartum rage. I mean, we're talking more about postpartum anxiety, postpartum depression, but rage is a really specific thing. But before we get to that, exactly, I'm curious, you know, do you think there's something almost necessary or intrinsic to matrescence that is this underworld journey, that is this sort of darkness? I feel like we pathologize it quite a bit, and maybe there's like shades of gray here. I'd just love to get your take on that, muse about it with you for a little bit.
Yeah, so you and I talked about, when we were talking about coming to this conversation, something about a descent, mm-hmm, right? A descent in the postpartum time that happens. And I just have to say from the outset, I have zero answers. So yeah, it would be just amusing between us, but some ideas that I have had are, one of them is that I feel like in the, maybe it's in the tissue memory, even in some ways, mm-hmm, of when we open up that space, mm-hmm, right, that's opened up initially by the pregnancy, the baby growing, and then, you know, then the baby and the placenta and the fluids leave, you know, there's this idea of ancestral connection for me, mm-hmm, that comes up with, and tissue memory and cellular memory. And that maybe, just maybe, this is just a crazy idea I'm having lately, that we access or we drop into the collective world of mothers, or that collective space of matrescence, as you said it, I love that word so much, mm-hmm, when we go through that process, and that maybe it's meant to open us up into that realm where we actually have access to the mothers, mm, our ancestors, and maybe just the collective consciousness of mothers. I mean, I had experiences postpartum that probably brought me to this, right? To where, mm, to where I was having a really hard time, and just, you know, my kind of ceremonial work that I've been deeply steeped in for decades, I think led me to just the, okay, and I'm looking up and holding my hands up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do I do? I need help right now. Like, just the asking, coming to the point of asking for help, first of all, for me, was like a huge transition. Mm-hmm. And then also in that moment, feeling that collective that I'm talking about, feeling that access in some ways to that collective space of the mothers.
Mm.
And that feeling of an answer coming, saying, why are you trying to do this all by yourself? Why are you trying to do this all by yourself? With the little pat on the back. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know if that really speaks to this descent.
Yeah. My mind is going in a lot of different directions. You know, there's like so many layers to this, because there's the access that we have to the undigested stories, the undigested experiences of our ancestors through our own body. And when there's like this radical opening that birth is, you know, an undeniable reckoning with your most intimate tissue. I think that there's, you know, I believe wholeheartedly we have access to the unseen in ways that we don't otherwise. You know, perhaps through different forms of ceremony, but birth is its own like very profound ceremony.
Oh yes.
And the healing process afterwards, I think too. And the, as I heard you say that, like, what do I do? That call to surrender and ask for help. Some of my own personal rage has come from like screaming into the void, like no one's there. I can't do this by myself, but I have to.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of an experience that is for women in our present culture, because we're all so scattered apart, so isolated, so busy, mm-hmm. so overwhelmed by our own stuff. And particularly, you know, I can't say this with any certainty, but I gave birth just before and then in the midst of the pandemic. So much isolation, so much volatility. And I'm certain that I'm still kind of like shedding that from my nervous system. And the sensitivity, the openness, the malleability that is present during postpartum healing. I think that some of what you're saying, that we're accessing, you know, our own ancestral inheritance is true, but then also that like vulnerability to just external circumstances and forces and energies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And not how much information is coming in all the time.
Right. So something that you said was interesting to me. So if maybe rage comes from the feeling of shouting into the void and nobody's there, why sometimes do we feel like we're shouting into the void, and sometimes we actually do feel like we're shouting into a crowded room of people who are there to help us?
Mm.
What is that? What is it that creates that disparity of experiences?
Mm. I had this thought even before you asked this question, but my own conditioning to not ask for help or not need help creates its own like almost blindedness, right? So I know in my own system, it's very, very difficult to receive help. So there's just this like feedback loop, right? No one's coming to save you. You have to do this yourself, but I'm collapsing, but I'm dying. I can't do this by myself. And I had an experience fairly recently. I reached out, long story short, I did this sleep training program for my son. We were really struggling, and it's this app and you have 24 access for this amount of time. And then it's not 24/7 access anymore, but they're still there to support you. And I had reached out because we were having some trouble and no one got back to me. And then it was just like, follow this link. The information you need is in the training that you had. And I was like, so pissed. Just felt like utterly abandoned, you know, left by the side of the road, like a dog. And so I reached out, I was like, I need to cancel this. Like I want my money back. And so then of course, somebody got on the phone with me right away. We're talking through what happened. And she was like, well, in the message that you sent, you never said you needed to speak to someone right away. You know, and I went back and I read my message and it was like, so polite. And so like, I'm okay when you have time, but in my mind, in my body, I was like fucking desperate. Mm-hmm. And that was such a powerful reflection for me that like, I actually hadn't asked for help. But in my mind, I was like screaming, pounding on the doors. Listen to me. Why won't anyone listen to me? It was wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all internalized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Whoa.
Whoa.
Well, thanks to you, I was able to connect some of these dots.
Now, I don't want to mischaracterize my own experience and say that there were always a crowd of women, unseen women, waiting to gather me up and take care of me. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about, that feeling of I got to do it all myself and there's nobody else, you know? But I think it's just knowing and trusting that even though there aren't always the physical assistance that I need, that there's also an unseen
web,
unseen support from my own self.
Yeah.
And from the collective.
Well, I mean, geez, talk about like a missing piece of the education. The significance of our spiritual connectedness is, I mean, we can't overestimate the power of that. And so much of the education that's available, I mean, as I just shared with my story, like it's difficult for it to even seep in because the conditioning we've had for so long is like, oh yeah, 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 that's a nice idea, but it doesn't actually shift our system. It doesn't actually, you know, most of us, this is not true of everyone, I'll speak for myself. The amount of preparation that's generally done for pregnancy, you know, people will work out or they'll change their diet or, you know, perhaps sometimes not even that. Mm-hmm. And so there's just not a lot of, I think there's a lot of this misunderstanding that you're just going to like have a baby and fold it into the mix.
Right. And then you're told, well, that's what all the women before us did.
Totally. They just get on with it.
Then they went back to work. I'm so tired of that story. Whether it's true or not is not the point. It's just that shouldn't be an example of anything, really.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what are some of, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I want to hear where you want to go.
I was just going to ask, you know, to go a little bit deeper because you have such a rich treasure trove of experience. Like, what are some of the things that you see most women struggle with in the postpartum period? What are some of the like primary challenges, whether or not they're like can be remediated through Ayurveda? It's more just like these trials, these challenges that we go through as women becoming mothers.
A whole group of things come to mind, some of which are very mechanical and extremely important, like constipation. I mean, I see constipation is like a big deal in early postpartum, and I see it happen a lot. And even that, it's like, people are like, I don't even know what to do. I can't poop. And then of course the sleep. God, I think the sleep is probably, it might be the worst thing about it, because sleep exacerbates, not sleeping enough, exacerbates everything else.
Yeah.
All well, goading feelings and physical things going on are exacerbated by not sleeping.
Yeah, because that's the probably most important thing we do for recovery. Like, even if you're just a person who exercises, the most best thing you can do is like eat food and sleep well, so your muscles can recover after this like mega experience of pregnancy and birth.
And what's the prevailing advice, do you think? Do you like, what do you hear?
Sleep when the baby sleeps.
Sleep when the baby sleeps. Did that make you angry when in postpartum?
No, it like it did. It just didn't really make sense to me the first time. Okay. And then with my second, with Kiara, like I did. I just slept on the couch with her. She slept a lot. She slept a lot those first few months. She was, you know, waking up throughout the night to feed. Of course, I was up a lot, but I just like slept. I just sort of said, fuck it. And I was basically on the couch taking lots of mini naps all day. And it like, that was hard too.
It's the most amazing and truest advice to sleep when the baby sleeps. And I personally, that made me angrier than anything else that's being told that, because it's not always that simple.
Right. Of course. Right. Especially, I mean, if you have another child.
If you have another child and you're getting in your own way. Like, I should be doing this and I need to be doing that. Or my nervous system, and maybe these are just the same thing, my nervous system isn't allowing me to sleep when the baby sleeps, because then the baby's asleep and I'm like going like this, like, can I do it? What should I do? You know?
Yeah. I got to clean that thing. I should get myself this. I should, you know, it's your only moment to not, to maybe move around on your own. Right. I know it's simply so complex, and I don't know if this was your experience, but then in those moments, that's really when I feel like the complexity of my second postpartum experience as compared to my first. My husband was home with me for 4 months when my son was born. There was no one with me after my daughter was born, and now I had two children, and it was like a total collapse of my spirit. Like, it was so crazy, the things. And this is the thing, you know, there are these tools, there's this incredible toolkit available through, you know, so many expressions of cultural wisdom, but we're talking about Ayurveda, so there's this wonderful map and toolkit. And there's the simple fact that like you need help to employ those tools. And the caring for the child takes help. Mm-hmm. It's so impractical if you're on your own. And I feel real, I feel two things. I feel this complex mix of like, I want everyone to have these tools. I want everyone to know what these tools are. And I also want it to be known and want it to be normal that this is not a one person job.
Yes.
Like, you need so much help for the healing and the recovery to happen. So I feel like almost like first things first, don't be alone through your sacred window. Mm-hmm. Don't be alone.
We're saying it now.
2 weeks with your partner home is not enough. Right. 4 weeks with your partner home is not enough. And again, of course, we're bumping up into like all sorts of social ills.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, sticking to the topic of what it takes to heal and recover from having a baby, don't be alone. Rule one.
So if your partner can't be there, or if you don't have a partner, somebody needs to be there. And all the things that I was just mentioning or just jumping into mentioning are supported by having help, and help is exactly what you need, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, hiring a service to do this thing, that thing, and the other thing, or hopefully, and having someone in your home as well who can prepare food and allow you to get the rest that you need. Allow you time so you can poop and not stay constipated. I mean, come on.
Well, I want to go back to that because, you know, it's very common and there are remedies for it, but what do you see as being some of the primary causes of it? Like, what are things people don't think about that can actually contribute to constipation?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's naturally like the situation for it to arise is naturally already present in the fact of having birthed. And so then when you jump into eating really difficult, heavy foods, boom, you have, you know, another contributing factor. And then the natural dryness that comes in the postpartum time, another contributing factor. So really easy to digest foods, plenty of warm fluids and oil in the food really help that situation, right? In Ayurveda, we use a lot of ghee in the postpartum, and really oleating your system and making that food kind of oily and soft and moist, it just kind of works wonders for getting the bowels to move in an easy, more comfortable way.
I learned recently that whenever there is, you know, when the body has to do extra work to, for example, if we're drinking ice water and your body has to warm up, you know, has to like make an adjustment because of this extreme temperature differential, your body responds with adrenaline. And so that contributes to vata. Mm-hmm. Even bubbly water, the extra oxygen or carbon dioxide in the system, your body responds as like there's imbalance. And so it impacts our blood sugar. It impacts our adrenaline. It can actually adrenalize you just to be drinking bubbly water, not to mention the extra air in the system, which will dry it out. Mm-hmm. And I think these things that are just so commonplace and like thoughtless, you know, we just consume. It's important to recognize beyond just like, that's not good for you.
Right.
But if you're noticing that you're feeling a little extra anxiety or a little extra erratic, ungrounded, you're having a hard time sleeping, these could be contributing factors. But then once you've also, when you can settle the system a little bit more, even that can contribute to more ease with elimination. Yeah. Digestion and elimination. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I know as a new mom, when things are so hard, it's like, don't you dare tell me I can't have this.
I know. Yeah. There's that feeling. But, oh man, but
I love a poop. I love a poop more than I love a bubbly water. So
right. And what I would say back is if you really want to feel good after those first 6 weeks and like, wow, I'm actually feeling like really strong and really good, lean into some ancient wisdom. And, you know, I don't know. For me, like it's easy enough. Like I'm like, I want to hear that ancient wisdom. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if it's not enough, then maybe it takes a little bit more explanation, but the ancient wisdom, I think is, you know, it's there, like we talked about in the beginning, for a reason, partly from trial and error. And also because these are the laws of nature. If you have a hot system where 98.6 ish degrees inside, you put cold water in there, it shocks the system. Mm-hmm. You want something that's roughly body temperature. as your fluid intake. Stick with that. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yes. And so much of, we are so oriented as a culture to do things that aren't in line with nature. So old habits die hard, yeah. I think is what I want to say to that. I do want to, and maybe this will be sort of our, some of our closing thoughts, but to just specifically state and let you go into a bit of the 42 days for 42 years adage.
Mm-hmm. The 42 days for 40. So you mean more than just describing the sacred window that I talked about before with the rest?
Yeah. Could you go into like, perhaps some of the why? I don't want to like,
why, what it does for us in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. The significance of that on our ongoing long-term health.
Mm-hmm. So the saying that the 42 days postpartum affects the next 42 years of a woman's life, which I think really is to say basically the rest of her life, or at least until she's postmenopausal is another way we could look at it. It's a big deal. So it just tells us basically that what we do postpartum really affects our long-term health. And so there's another reason to listen to this ancient wisdom, because I actually believe that because we're in such a malleable state postpartum, that we actually have the ability not only to be as good as we were before or as healthy as we were before, but actually even improve our health in that time period, because we are malleable. And we can use that time period of those first 42 days or 6 weeks to really listen to our deeper wisdom, really rest, really heal well. And then that allows us to be, you know, the mothers that we want to be, the partners that we want to be, the people that we want to be, and have the energy and the health to enjoy the rest of our lives. I think we've all seen examples of women who, and maybe this is ourselves in some certain aspects, but who just haven't thrived and who have had a lot of health problems postpartum. Thyroid issues are one of the big ones, I think, that we see a lot, right? So yes, the importance of those 6 weeks is, you know, can't be overstated, I think.
And I'm curious about
that adage, I think really shows us like, oh, wow, that's a big deal. You know, that's going to affect my health for the rest of my life. Okay, now I got it.
And I never thought about this aspect of it, but, you know, there's so much tending to the digestion in postpartum. That's like the whole thing. And because after you've had all your organs moved out of place, displaced by your growing baby, and then this time that it takes to resettle and get the tissue lubricated again. And if you're lactating, it's so difficult to stay adequately hydrated. It's a real labor, like an ongoing labor of love to nourish the tissues again. And that, you know, all of the hormonal fluctuation and how significant our digestion is and elimination is to just, I hate this word, but purifying, like rebalancing the system, finding this new baseline so that moving forward, our endocrine system, our digestion, our immune system are all functioning properly. I got to speak to he told me not to call him that, Scott Blossom on the podcast. This is the whole thing with, you know, he's a doctor of Chinese medicine, but in California, he's not an MD. So you can't technically be called Dr. Scott, which I think is such a load of crap.
Yes.
But anyways, Scott Blossom was on my podcast. He's so amazing. And we spoke about the gut and the immune system, gut health, and also the microbiome as it changes during pregnancy and how significant it is for birth. It was a great conversation, but you know, all of these things, again, it's the five elements in the system of Ayurveda, and it's different names for things, but it expresses the same intricacy and interconnectedness of all of our systems. And this, you know, the Shrotamsi, the channels through which everything moves and passes and feeds the next system and feeds the next system. And I, you know, I always feel full after talking to you and learning from you. And in this moment, I'm just feeling, you know, I'll hold it for myself, hold it for myself and all women, that we could move through our days with such reverence for this incredible body and the significance of each meal, you know, each opportunity to move and be together and laugh and connect and in love, really, really, really matters. Mm-hmm. I love you so much, Sunny.
I love you, Stacy. We could talk for hours.
I know.
And I
know.
I think, you know, like part of me is wanting, and we both do this through our work in other ways, but is wanting to go back and say, okay, here's what you should do in the postpartum now. Here's all our advice. Mm-hmm. But I also love that we just talked about it and left so many open spaces for spirit to come in. And yeah, we'll have time to give more at other times. But just I'm thinking about the people listening, and I'm hearing them going, well, what is it? What do I what is the answer? Yeah.
I think that it is a significant piece to, you know, if you walk away with anything from this conversation, the sacred window, your postpartum time, matrescence, the time it takes, you know, this transformation to motherhood is a big fucking deal. It doesn't, I mean, it doesn't just happen. There's a lot that goes into it. And it's a big deal. It takes a village. Honoring mothers is, I think, the most important thing we can do. So, Sunny, thank you. I would love to give you space to make any announcements, share with folks how they can find you, what you have coming up. I hands down recommend everything that Sunny has to offer. So with that, let them know how to find you.
Okay. I want to let people know that if you are in the childbearing year, if you're coming into the childbearing year, to work with someone like Stacy or myself or our colleagues, because there's a lot of support out there for you. Just want to let you know that. And if you're somebody who's wanting to get into supporting other mothers, please look us up at perinatalwisdomschool.com. You can find my private practice at mamaayurveda.com. And I lead nourish and reset sessions at the equinoxes for our general health, but also for the perinatal time in particular. Come find one of us and get some really good support for yourself.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you got something that you'll carry with you from this conversation. Sunny, thank you again. I can't wait to talk next time.